Good morning. My name is Joe Leach. I'm one of the elders here at Grace Church. I'm based primarily at our newest site in Havant, which is going really well. It's great fun, all going really well. But this week, we are in week two of our new mini-series this morning, which I'll tell you about a bit more in a minute. But I wanted to start by talking about birthday presents, actually. Because everyone has their own preferred way of getting a birthday present for someone else, choosing what to get them. Some people like to be given a list, don't they? You know, so you kind of got a clearly defined list. You know you get something from the list, something you know they'll want and hopefully put to good use. Some people go one further and like to even get a voucher or just some cash or something, so they definitely know that whatever that person goes and buys, they are going to want and put to use. Or some people, you kind of aren't so keen on that, like the idea of being a bit more creative and trying to just choose what to get. They go and get something the person hasn't asked for and hopefully they'll like that. Of course, the gamble of being creative is that you totally miss the target and, you know, they never use it. They don't really want it. I'm not sure where I personally sit. I kind of like to be creative, but I seem to have learned over experience that I'm not particularly good at it. So I don't really know where I sit. But one thing that everyone wants is we want the person receiving the present to enjoy it, to love the present, and hopefully to kind of use it relatively regularly. But how much more is that the case when we give something to someone to look after for a limited period of time? So when it belongs to them, but we're looking after it, like if someone asks you to house sit for them, for example, or if they ask you to look after their dog or something like that. Generally, people would be happy for you to kind of put it to good use, you know, take the dog to walks where you like to go on walks and to make the most of the house and use it. But certainly, people want you to look after it as well and take it with a bit of seriousness, the responsibility they're giving you. Remember that it belongs to them and not to you, to understand that you are looking after it on their behalf. It doesn't belong to you. And this morning, we are carrying on our three-part series, as I say, which we've simply named Jesus on Giving, where we're going to be looking at three things that Jesus said on the subject of money and giving. Now, money, talking about that, it's by no means the only thing we talk about here at Grace Church. But at the same time, talking about money is not a no-go area of preaching either. So in the autumn of last year, we preached on giving as a special one-off gift. And the church, church responded in just an amazing way. It was really an amazing time to be part of Grace Church, actually. And over the next 3 weeks, we're going to be talking about more of a regular giving and the general stewardship of everything that we have. And this is regular giving we haven't talked about since 2015. So it's kind of overdue, really. And at the end of the day, it's just good to teach about money and what we should do with it. Why? Because the Bible teaches about it a lot. If we're preaching the Bible, then we need to be preaching on money and the key role it plays, actually, in our relationship with God. And through this mini-series, we're going to be asking everyone in Grace Church to take a faith step when it comes to their giving. You might have noticed these pages in the What's On sheet, which are all just for your personal reflection. We won't be collecting these in at any point, and I'll explain more about them later. Today, I am talking more broadly about our general stewardship of all the stuff that we have. I'm going to be talking about true stewardship. We won't be before I kind of use that word stewardship too many times without explaining what I mean, here's a kind of a quick definition for you. When talking about stewardship, we are talking about how we handle the resources that God has entrusted to us. And the reason I was talking about birthday presents and house sitting and stuff is because stewardship of our things, the resources that God has entrusted to us, is more like house sitting than receiving birthday presents. It's not like God has given you a birthday present or, you know, lots of birthday presents as the case is. And, you know, he's just really hoping you enjoy it and make the most of it. But at the end of the day, you do what you want with it and you don't need to look after it because it's yours. You do what you want. No, it's more like God has given you some stuff, a house or a dog or whatever it is, to look after. And sure, you know, make the most of it, use it well, but remember that it doesn't ultimately belong to you. So what are the things then? What is the stuff, the resources that God has entrusted to you? What has God given you to steward? I'll just put up a list. Your money, kind of obvious, we'll start there. Something God has given to you to steward. Your possessions, your house, it's kind of possessions but slightly different. Your time, we've all been given 24 hours a day, every day. What do you do with it? Your skills and your gifts, your abilities, your job. Your body is entrusted to you from God, your family, your marriage and children, your church. Now, that's especially the case for elders, I think it's the case for all of us that God has given us that to steward. Your words, the things you say, what you say with them, how you say them. Your spiritual life is certainly up there as well. And the earth or environment, which I'm going to put in brackets because it's kind of a theological debate. We might be called to rule over it, have dominion over it rather than to steward it. But there's loads of things that God has entrusted to us. All of these things he has entrusted to us to manage and to steward well. So God has entrusted a lot to us. Let's get to the Bible then and see what it has to say. Specifically, in this series, as I say, we're looking at what Jesus says. So we're going to be in Luke 16. So feel free to go ahead and turn there now. This is known as the parable of the shrewd manager. And it's kind of slightly surprising in what it says at times, which you may pick up as we read through. We're going to be in Luke 16, 1 to 15. So says this, Jesus told his disciples, there was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, what is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management because you cannot be manager any longer. The manager said to himself, what shall I do now? My master is taking away my job. I'm not strong enough to dig and I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses. So he called in each one of his master's debtors. He asked the first, how much do you owe my master? 3,000 litres of olive oil, he replied. The manager told him, take your bill, sit down quickly and make it 1,500. Then he asked the second, and how much do you owe? 30 tons of wheat, he replied. He told him, take your bill, make it 24. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself, so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much, and whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? And if you've not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you your property of your own? No one can serve two masters. Either you'll hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. The Pharisees, who loved money, heard all this and were sneering at Jesus. He said to them, you're the ones who justify yourselves in the eyes of others, but God knows your hearts. What people value highly is detestable in God's sight. So like I said, it's a potentially confusing and controversial parable. There's that weird bit, isn't there, when the master commends the manager for his shrewdness and for basically ripping everyone off, ripping even himself off, which seems odd. I think the best explanation is that the master is commending the manager for his shrewdness in simply looking out for himself. It's kind of saying, fair play, that's what I would have done. I would have looked out for myself. Now, it's important we don't think that this is Jesus commending the manager for his, you know, harsh, selfish shrewdness, or even commending the master for him commending the manager, if you can track with that. But an important thing to remember when looking at Jesus's parables, any of them, and his parables are just stories that Jesus told, really, is that they almost always have only one main point. So therefore, we need to be careful not to get bogged down in the detail, which we certainly are at risk of doing in this parable here. in this instance as well, Jesus does actually kind of explain what he means and in the main points of the parable at the end. So I'm going to explain what Jesus is talking about here, and then we're going to look at how to apply it into our lives, specifically in the area of money, and I'll explain more about why later, and then we're going to kind of talk a bit about our motivation in it. That's where we're going. I think we can summarize what Jesus is saying through this parable as this. We are not masters of our stuff. We are not mastered by our stuff, but we are managers of our stuff. We're not masters of our stuff. We're not mastered by our stuff, but we are managers of our stuff. When I say stuff, I just mean the things that God has entrusted to us, the resources he's entrusted to us. So firstly, we're not masters of our stuff. Let's talk, what does that mean? This is really what I was talking about before we read the passage. We have been asked to house it more than we have been given a birthday present. In the parable, we are represented, you can put yourself in there, we are represented by the manager and not the master or the owner. God is represented by the owner. And just as a master or an owner entrust resources and responsibility to a manager, so has God entrusted resources and responsibility to us. But we do not ultimately own them. And this is just something that's so clear in the Bible. 1 Corinthians 4:7 says, "What do you have that you did not receive? And if you did receive it, why do you boast as though you did not?" There is nothing we have that God did not give to us. It is all a gift. Psalm 24 says, "The earth is the Lord's and everything in it." It's all his, and he has entrusted the things we have to us. Some people like to try and deny this stuff. They say, "Now, I've worked so hard to get to where I've got to have the money that I have and to go on the holidays that I go on. It's my blood and sweat and tears which has got me to where I am." We just need to remember everything we have is a resource that God has entrusted to us. Your job is a gift from God. The skills that you have that enabled you to get your job, they are a gift from God. The drive that you have that enabled you to get the skills, to get the job, your drive is a gift from God. The environment you grew up in, which enables you to go out and get training in order to get a job, is a gift from God. Any one of us could have been born into an Inuit tribe 1,000 years ago. We could have been an Eskimo in the Arctic. And you know, you could have been like the most driven person ever, with the most driven attitude. You could have been the cleverest, most intellectual person the world has ever known. You could have been the most socially skilled person the world has ever known, but you would have never been rich. You would have never have like gone on a holiday. It just wouldn't have happened because of the situation that you were born into. So we can convince ourselves that we have earned it by our own excellencies. Those who have less because they haven't worked as hard as me. But all our skills are gifts. Everything we have is a gift from God. It's important to remember as well that God has actually given us way more than just our things, our stuff. He has spared nothing from us, and he's even given his own son for us. Romans 8:32 says it wonderfully. "He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also along with him graciously give us all things?" Without the gift of his son, Jesus, we would have no true joy. We'd have no hope, no peace. However much stuff we had, however rich we are, but out of his grace, he has not even spared giving his son so that we can know joy and peace and grace, because he is so merciful and compassionate. Just as Jesus the Son is a gift of grace from God the Father, so is everything else that you have. It is not yours. It is all a gift of unmerited grace from God. We are not masters of our stuff. Secondly, we're not mastered by our stuff. I'll be brief on this one because I think it's pretty simple. We're not masters of our resources, but we aren't mastered by them either. We're not controlled by them. Jesus concludes this parable by saying in verse 13, "No one can serve two masters. Either you'll hate the one and love the other, you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." Notice it uses the word cannot. It's not should not, but cannot. You simply cannot say God is your Lord and your master if money is your master too, if money controls you. You can't be mastered by our money or any other stuff. It's simple. Simple as that. Most people in the world do live for money in at least some way. That's what it says in the parable. The decisions that people make are based primarily on money. Now, I'm not saying don't ever make financial decisions. That would be silly and bad stewardship. But is money the primary driver in most of your decisions? Have you become a slave to money? And it's not just money we can be mastered by. You know, do you not have people around your house because you're worried about your carpet? Maybe you're mastered by your possessions. Do you have no time to serve in church because you're so busy, but you can get through a whole binge watch of a Netflix series every week? No problem. Maybe you are mastered by your time and you're a slave to it. We aren't masters of or mastered by our stuff, but we are managers of our stuff. And this is stewardship, handling the resources that God has entrusted to us. Everything you have is a gift from God for you to steward. We aren't masters of our resources, so we don't own them, and we aren't slaves to them either, but we have been given responsibility of managing them on behalf of the owner. So just like a manager in a company, a manager is not the owner of the company's resources, including the staff, but they have been given responsibility to manage it all well and to make the most of the resources. Verse 10 of Luke 16 says, "Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much." It's again a pretty simple truth. If you're faithful with little, you'll be faithful with lots. If you can't be trusted with little, you can't be trusted with lots. It's a principle we use in parenting, isn't it? As we give increased responsibility to children, they need to be able to prove their trustworthiness with the little things first. So if you've got a kid who's never crossed a road on their own, or never been out of the house on their own, and they come up to you and say, "Hey, Mom, Dad, can I go to London on my own with my mates and walk around London, get on the train, and then come back?" You're probably going to say no, aren't you? So no, hang on, you need to learn to cross a road first. You need to prove your trustworthiness with little before you can be trusted with lots. And it's also, this principle, it's the same with grumpy people. So I don't know if you've ever thought or if you've ever heard someone say, "Oh, I hope I don't become grumpy when I get old." I've heard people say that, and it just doesn't work like that. People's grumpiness doesn't depend on circumstances. At the end of the day, grumpy people are grumpy, and not grumpy people are not grumpy. You get the principle. If you're grumpy with little, you'll be grumpy with lots. If you're faithful with little, you'll be faithful with lots. The point is that your faithfulness and your trustworthiness in the management of the resources that God has entrusted to you is not dependent on what or how many resources that God has entrusted to you. It is only dependent on whether you are faithful or not, you know, or grumpy or not. So we can think, no, I'm one of those people who does really well when given lots of responsibility. I'm really good at leading other people, managing other people. I just don't really cope that well with not much responsibility. You know, I don't cope well being led by others. Well, Jesus says, no, that is a load of rubbish. If you are leadable, you'll be a better leader. If you are teachable, you will be a better teacher. If you can be trusted with very little, you can be trusted with lots as well. It's also important to note that just like the manager in this parable who is accountable to the master, we are also all accountable to God for how well we have managed the resources that he has entrusted to us. Now, I'm not talking about your salvation and heaven and hell, whether you're saved and can enter into relationship with God. That all depends entirely on whether you believe that Jesus is Lord or not. Jesus has made a way for us to have relationship with God, and he has dealt with our sin and everything else that would prevent us from that relationship. All we need to do is believe in him, and we get life in him. But we will also be held to account for how well we have handled the resources God has entrusted to us. So, for example, God has entrusted his church to elders. And elders of the church will be held to account for how well they have stewarded God's church. Hebrews 13:17 says, "Have confidence in your leaders and submit to their authority." Why? Because they keep watch over you as those who must give an account. It's a sobering thought for me as an elder of this church, but it's biblically pretty clear. And this passage is equally implicitly clear that will be the case for all of us when it comes to whatever God has entrusted to you. So we aren't masters of our stuff. It's all a gift from God. We are not mastered by our stuff. We aren't to become slaves to it, but we are managers of our stuff. God has given us that responsibility, and it matters how good or how faithful we are at stewarding it. So let's apply it then. How should we apply it to our lives? Well, we have all these things to steward, don't we, which I put up earlier: our job, our body, our money, our family, our church. And in order to apply it to a bit more, I'm going to be talking pretty exclusively about how we manage our money. I'm going to be doing that for two reasons why I'm applying this exclusively into the area of money today. Firstly, money is the focus of the passage that we are talking about, that I'm preaching from. It is about stewardship, certainly, but it is focused around money. So that's what we're going to do. And then secondly, also, I sincerely believe if we can focus on the area of money and get this right, then, or at least we can make progress in this area, then I think all these other things will just fall into place. Jesus said, "Where your treasure is, there will your heart also be." The best statement of your heart is your bank statement. I'm preaching to our hearts this morning, and I think that if we can sort money out, then that is the best way to get our hearts right, in a sense. What we're going to do is we're going to look at some signs that might indicate I can improve my stewardship or my management of money. Now, let's be clear. We can all improve the way we steward the things that God has entrusted to us. And I'm going to put up a list of signs, and I am confident that you will be on this list somewhere. You'll see yourself. It's not about guilt, this. It's not really even about sin. It's just to help us to see where we can improve in this area. And I'm certainly on there, personally. I'm not perfect at this. I'm not pretending I am. I'm not going to tell you where I am, but I am on there. I'm just preaching the Bible and biblical principles, and sometimes that can involve being a bit offensive. So I might offend some people, but here we go. Here's some signs that might indicate I can improve my stewardship of money. Firstly, using payday loans. Hopefully no one is doing this. If you are using payday loans where you kind of get, 5,000% interest, then you probably need some help, actually. These things will not help you. They will destroy you. Don't use payday loans. That would be a sign that you could improve your stewardship of money. What about this one, though? Hiding bills or ignoring them might be an indication that you aren't stewarding your money well. No one likes getting a bill through the door, but kind of do you just like, or put that under the mat or something, race there, try and get there before your spouse. Fear of bills is another one. Not necessarily hiding or ignoring them, but just having a fear of seeing them, so that you kind of try and deal with them. You're not ignoring them, but they strike fear into you, and you kind of, oh no, not again. Or robbing Peter to pay Paul. You know what I mean? When I say this, kind of just moving money from this account to this account, even though you know that you're just going to cause a problem over here when you've done that, and you're not really helping yourself out. Maybe there's no clear budget. If you just don't have a clear budget, then certainly you could steward your money better. Unable to say what your true bank balance is. Now, I don't mean, just open up your phone or whatever and you can see your bank balance, there it is. I mean your true bank balance. So when you consider that you might have a bill going out tomorrow or something like that, and you kind of think, this is how much money have I actually got this month or this week or whatever it is. And I'm not saying, again, you would need to know this like now, but if you went away and did an hour's worth of research or something, you could come back and find out. Now, I know I'm setting the bar pretty high here, but I am doing signs that you could improve your stewardship. So I'm essentially setting the bar at perfection. I'm aware of that. But have you found yourself yet? I wonder if you have. I've got quite a few more to go yet, so keep going. Regularly going overdrawn. If the way that your finances work is that you regularly go overdrawn, and that's kind of not a surprising thing, not an unsurprising thing, it's normal, then you can improve, you could do better. Credit card loans are going up. I'm not saying that you should never have credit cards at all, and sometimes they're helpful, sometimes they're even necessary, but do you have a clear timeline in place to pay them back, or is the bill actually going up? Are you living on next month's money? The money you have already, or are you living on the money you're going to get next month? It's not ideal if you're living on next month's money. Maybe you're living on a credit card. What about this one? This one is a killer. Payday feels good to you. If you're budgeting well, then payday shouldn't really feel any better than any other day. It should just be, you know, a neutral day, the same as any other. If it's a relief or if we look forward to it, then we can improve our stewardship. This one, wealthy, but no idea of income and expenditure. Certainly, all of what I'm saying here doesn't just apply to those whose finances are tight. You might be wealthy and you know you've got loads more coming in than you've got going out, but you don't really know where all your money's going out. You just know you're going to be fine and you're still managing to save and whatever. You could steward better. Another one, you wouldn't want a friend to see your bank statement. Now, I get it, we're all English. People looking at your bank statement is intrinsically embarrassing. But are there things on your bank statement that you would be particularly embarrassed for someone else to see? Maybe even for your husband or for your wife to see. If so, then you could probably improve your stewardship. And then lastly, this one, are you not a generous giver? If you are not giving your money generously, then that is a sign that you could improve your stewardship. God wants us to be generous. We aren't masters after all, but we are managers. It's all His anyway. Now, I'm sure we've all found ourselves somewhere. Like I say, it's not about guilt. It's about growing. It's a journey. No one is going to nail it overnight. It is a journey of learning. And God wants for all of us, and I want for all of us, to be free of fear, you know, walking in faith and using the resources that God has given to us to be serving Him and serving others and flourishing in it. And I think it is clear that God would have us be generous givers. If we are to be good managers of the things that God has entrusted to us, then we need to be generous with them. And certainly generous with our money. And probably the primary way that we show God that we recognize we are managers of our resources and not masters is by giving a proportion back to Him through the church. In giving to the church, we're giving directly to God. I'm not preaching for my salary here or anything else other than your heart. I really am. Give your heart to God by giving generously to Him what is already His anyway, and it will bless you richly. And there is a faith step that every one of us can take over this 3-week series in the area of our giving. So let's look at this diagram that we have in the What's On as we look at our generosity and our stewardship. This is something we're going to be looking at every week in this mini-series on Jesus on giving. And the reason the diagram is shown as a plant is that giving is a growing and it is a changing thing. No one can say that they have reached the pinnacle of the plant. No one has absolutely nailed stewardship or giving and generosity. But everyone has room for growth, or certainly at least room for reassessment. You'll notice on the sheet that there are tick boxes. We're asking everyone in Grace Church to prayerfully consider if they could tick any of these boxes. Now, we won't be collecting these back at any point. Like I said, they're just for your personal reflections. And there's two questions on there. Where is your current level of giving on this diagram? And what faith step could you take in the area of your giving? But let me encourage you to either fill one of them in today, or do that, and you can do that in a moment, or it may be, as it would have to be for me, and it may be for you, you kind of need to go home and talk to someone else about it, and before you can make that commitment to yourself. Take it home, you know, put it somewhere you can't miss it, on the fridge or something. If you're someone who has a really tidy desk, put it in the middle of your desk, and so you know that you kind of really want to get it done and tidy your desk and address it as soon as you can. So where are you then? It may be that you are currently a non-giver and you're therefore not even on the plant. So here's a stat. Nearly 25% of Grace Church members do not give any money in any identifiable way. So I know there are some members of Grace Church who are not on the plant yet, let alone kind of non-members. Now, I don't know who you are, by the way. But you can make a huge faith step by stepping in and making a start today. I think it's probably, this is the biggest leap on the whole plant. Going from never giving to giving something is a huge first step. And it's a huge opportunity as well for you to grow and develop in your faithfulness. Could you tick the first box and then commit to yourself of making a first-time gift? Maybe you have given before. You give every so often when you feel led or at a gift day or whatever. Could you step up and give more regularly? Maybe add into your budget and do it every month and steward your money in that way. Move to a place of regularly worshiping and thanking God through giving. The first step for you would be to set up a standing order. There are others who give regularly every month or every week maybe, but proportionally they're not giving 10% of their first fruit income. Certainly, I don't know who you are, but is God calling you to go that bit further and give 10% regularly? It might be that this would require a bit of work with your whole finances and stewardship. You might need to scrap your existing budget, if you have one, and start again so that you put your giving in first and then sort out the rest. It might take some work. Certainly it requires faith and spirit-filled faith. Or you might be doing that and God could be calling you to go to the next step and to give over and above, to give sacrificially in a new way. God has given us everything we have. He didn't even spare his own son in giving us all things. There is no limit to what God is worthy of. And he calls us to display our gratitude to him in the way we give of our money. Maybe you could take this faith step and go to this level today. Start a new level of adventure with God as you give sacrificially and even in a slightly risky way. The New Testament calls us to this level of giving. We should all be aiming to get there eventually, but that may not be our faith step today. Maybe you're there already. Let me encourage you to even just review your giving. We can all do that. See if God is speaking to you in that area. It's a dynamic plant. No one has arrived. Taking any one of these faith steps requires a huge paradigm shift. It requires spirit-filled faith. And the faith step will be different for everyone, but we can all grow in the area of giving. Like we saw earlier, we can improve in the stewardship of our money, and we can all improve in generosity too. You know, God is not, he's not looking for kingdom fundraisers. God does not need our money or our resources. He gave them to us in the first place. You know, he could take them away at any point. But he is looking for disciples who grow in maturity and stewardship and love for him. And to help you make your faith step, I'm going to talk about this for a minute. Now, you might have heard of this before. Maybe you had professional training in it. But I want to talk about this in terms of will, skill, or focus. This is the idea that if you want someone to grow or develop in a certain area, you first need to identify what it is that's holding them back. So maybe you've got someone who you're training to play golf at a high level, but they aren't making as much progress as they should be. So you need to figure out what it is that's holding them back before you can figure out how to help them. So if their problem is lack of skill, for example, then there is no point trying to envision them and inspire them and say, come on, you can do it, and you need to encourage them. There's no point, because they already want to do it. They already have the will. They just don't have the skill. They can't do it. You need to teach them to swing the club properly or to putt better. They need training in the skill. You get the idea. Now, if there's anything that is holding you back from taking a faith step in your giving, then it will help you to identify what it is that's holding you back before you can do anything to address it. So I'm going to look at these, but I'm going to do it in a slightly different order. Firstly, skill. It may be that the main thing that is holding you back from improving in your stewardship and in giving generously is that you just don't know how. You know you want to, but you don't know how on earth to make a budget of all your money, or how to set up a standing order, how to transfer money, or whatever it is. Very simply, you need training. Come and talk to someone. We would love to help you. Don't let this hold you back from growing and taking faith steps if you want to. Email in if you need to know the bank details, whatever it is. Don't let not knowing something hold you back from taking a step of faith. It might be that it's a matter of focus. You might know how to do the thing that you want to do, and you might actually want to do it, you want to grow in giving or in the stewardship of your money or in anything else, but you just can't focus to getting round to doing it. I mean, at the end of the day, this is just a matter of obedience. Get on with it and do it. For those in this camp, let me say this. Praise the living God for the gift of standing orders and the gift of rotas. These things help us to commit to doing things. They take the emotional drive to do things out of it in a helpful way, actually, so that we're not driven by our emotions, how we feel about it, but by conscious decisions to give or to commit to serve in an area and to manage our resources well. Or it might be a matter of will. And this is the big one, really. This is the one for all of us. It is ultimately all about the will. Because if we truly have this in place, then we'll motivate ourselves to go and get the skill or the focus. It is all about our hearts. That is what God's after. He wants our will, our hearts, and our desires. That was what he's critical of the Pharisees for at the end of this parable, because they weren't giving their hearts. And I'll close with this as I talk about this. I heard this recently. It has helped me personally just a serious amount. If what we think we have, how rich, how privileged we think we are, how blessed we think we have been, is kind of this much. And what we think we deserve is this much. We think we deserve everything we have, and in fact, we deserve way more than what we've got. We're pretty hard done by. Then that gap just leads to incessant grumbling. We will be grumpy and utterly discontent. However, if what we think we have is kind of this much, if we think we are rich and privileged and blessed beyond all measure, and what we think we deserve is more down here, that, you know, we think we have way more than we actually deserve, then that gap leads to total and utter gratitude. The reality is that the things that God has entrusted to us and given to us are way beyond what we deserve. We deserve nothing. No one has ever given to God that he should repay him. God owes us nothing. It's not dependent. None of this is dependent on how much you actually have. It's what you think you have. And we all have way more than we deserve. Despite deserving so little, God has given to each one of us so richly. He has given you all your money, your house, your possessions, your church, your skills even. It is all a gift from God, and we are only really house sitters of all this stuff. It is all his anyway. And more than any of that, ultimately, God hasn't even spared his own son in what he has given to us. His own son was given to die for you because he loves you. If the thing holding us back from taking this faith step this morning, from managing us our resources better, is the will, and it's holding us all back to some extent, isn't it? Then we just need to understand and appreciate all that God has lovingly and graciously given to us for our hearts to be drawn to him. We love and we give to God because he first loved us and has given to us so richly. Let's honor God with responsible management or stewardship of our stuff, the resources that he's entrusted to us. And let's worship him through generous giving that springs from hearts of gratitude for all that he has done for us and given to us.
Brilliant. So it was challenging, wasn't it? And some good stuff there for us to respond to. And next week we'll be looking at our final part of the series. But if these guys could start playing. And what we're going to do now, we're just going to respond. We're going to take a moment just for personal reflection. Then we're going to take communion. Look at that. Why don't you stand with me for a minute? Let's get the blood flowing again. And if you can stand, don't worry, if you want to stay seated, that's fine. But let's just take a moment for personal reflection to that. I've found there were some things in there that perhaps challenge my own attitude towards how I handle what God's given me. And I think there's different ways that we can respond to this, isn't there? And there's, you can kind of respond, think, but I can't. And I can feel that sometimes. You think, how am I supposed to do that? And I just feel that that you need to know that there's grace in this. You know, that our giving is purely a response to God's grace for what he's done for us. And so I don't want anyone to hit a wall today and think, oh, this is too hard for me. This can't be right. I feel what you need to hear this morning is that God loves you. The Bible says God loves a cheerful giver, because actually when we understand God's generosity, our response is one of grace. We don't give out of guilt, out of compulsion, out of trying to keep up. So I just want all of us really to think about what we do with all of our resources, all the things Joe mentioned. Do we handle them in such a way that we think, actually, these things are a gift? Lord, help me to do the best with them that I can. Because that's the heart that Joe's going for, the heart that God's going for, is he just wants us to come to God with a sense of gratitude, saying, God, you've given me all of this, whatever it is, how big or how small, and say, God, what do you want me to do with it? Not to compare ourselves, not to feel guilt or to feel shame, or to turn away thinking this can't be for me, but say, no, God, you've given me this, what should I do? So just maybe ask that question yourself to God now. God, what have you given me? Show me how to look after it the best I can, to respond to you. And then what we're going to do is we're going to come to communion, and just as you ponder those things in your own heart, perhaps there's some areas in your life and you think, you know what, God, I haven't handled that thing well. Lord, will you change me there? Will you help me? And as we take communion, Jesus said that, you know, whenever you meet, do this in remembrance of me. In communion, it doesn't bring salvation. It's a remembrance of what God has already done for us, that God in his generosity gave us Jesus. And actually, that's what we needed more than anything else. That's what the whole world needs, is they need Jesus. Because the Bible teaches us that because of sin, we cannot earn our salvation. We cannot be perfect. We cannot attain to this level that gets set. But actually Jesus did in our place. And so what we're going to do as we respond to all of what's been said this morning, and to whatever God's saying in your own heart, maybe the trials and challenges you're going through, we're going to remember that God has offered us salvation in the person and work of Jesus, that we don't have to earn it. It's a free gift. That Jesus came and he died in our place. He paid the price for our sins so that we could stand before God holy and righteous, not in our own works, but in the works of Jesus. So let's remember that first. And then whatever we decide to do with our stewardship and our giving, let's do it in response to the gift of Jesus.